This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. There is a festival happening this weekend called the Tyagaraja Tenzin Music Festival over the Temple of Fine Arts. Its mission is to celebrate and educate, celebrate the patriarchs of Carnatic and Hindustani classical music, and educate all of us about this music. This much I know. To understand is the beginning of appreciation. And here to enlighten us about Carnatic music and Hindustani classical music are Bhuma Paranjothi, Kalpana Paranjothi, must be sisters, and Hariram Lam. Welcome. What is this music that you are bringing to this festival? You have first this Carnatic music and the other one is Hindustani. How are they different?
Carnatic music is largely practiced by the South Indians, and by which you want to zone into four states in South India: Karnataka, Kerala, Andhra Pradesh, and Tamil Nadu. The rest of India largely practices Hindustani music, and the difference is that the music originated as one, what we can call a pan-Indian music, and during the time when there was the Persian and Islamic invasion and revolution in India, that influence affected the music in the north of India, giving rise to the bifurcation or splitting of the system into two, which resulted in Carnatic and Hindustani music.
Otherwise, it would have been one. Is one more influenced by Hinduism and the other with influences from, let's say, Islam?
Yes and no. Largely Indian music at its source, so we're going back millennia even.
To the Vedas.
Was religious in origin, and a large essence of Carnatic music still remains spiritual, but I would not say that it is the main focus. We have many musicians who practice other religions on a day-to-day basis, but still are exponents of Carnatic music. Similarly, in Hindustani music, there's a lot of element of Islamic influence, and Sufi music, which is Islamic in nature. But also, that does not necessarily reflect in its entirety in the music.
It's just the influences that have been brought to bear rather than the religion itself.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah.
You have two people that you are celebrating. One is
Tyagaraja, yes.
Okay. Now, of the two, is he more prominent?
Well, I wouldn't know how to say who is prominent or not, but I do know that Tyagaraja is very largely celebrated across the world, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. In fact, he is one of the trinities of our Carnatic music. In fact, the whole celebration, you know, we have the Tyagaraja Aradhana, which is in commemoration to him due to his intense devotion and, of course, his contributions to Carnatic music. In fact, I was doing some research and apparently he has 24,000 or more compositions. But
That's a lot.
But only 700 are alive today. So, you know, I wouldn't know how to say who's most prominent or not, but this is as far as I know. So,
I mean, of the two, he is the younger one. He's closer to our time in the sense that he was from the 18th century.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other one was from
15th.
Yeah, about the same time as Shakespeare, or a little bit earlier than Shakespeare.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
How is the other one, Tansen, different?
Tansen was a musician at the Mughal emperor's court, Akbar the emperor. He was a musician, a poet, and he was known for his ragas. He's created a lot of ragas. Some of the ragas that we play today, like Mian Ki Todi, Mian Malhar, they're all ragas of his creation. And what was unique about Tansen, according to what we've read and we've heard, he has done miracles through his singing.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by he has miracles through his singing?
For example, to bring rain, they sang Rag Meghmalar. And while singing at the court, he's lit up lamps through the Rag Deepak. But nowadays, I mean, Rag Deepak is, we don't know what the rag is. But Malhar, Meg Malhar is a rag which is still sung till today. Mm-hmm. And so things like that. He was so powerful in his music.
Now, you said the influences of religion has somehow dissipated. But the very fact that, you know, she has brought up these things, a song about the creation of rain or the making of rain and the other one about lighting candles. If music is so religious, how are you going to get this outside of a particular religious group?
The music is deemed religious, a lot of it, particularly when you listen to vocal music, because the religious aspect of it comes through the song texts, be it in Carnatic music or Hindustani music. Carnatic music is, of course, very text-heavy, as opposed to Hindustani music.
What do you mean by that? Both have text. Though,
both
right?
They both have text, but a composition in Carnatic music, just for an example, might have 2 pages of text, just purely text.
More detailed storytelling.
More detailed storytelling, okay. Allegories to chronicles in a deity's life or things like that. Whereas the Hindustani music might just give you a couple of lines at the most, and then it's up to the musician to explore those lines through the music. So in terms of religious dissipation or religious propagation, that becomes the focus in vocal music. But you have instrumentalists whereby the text is completely taken out of the equation and all you hear is the music for the music.
Now, does it make one more, in a sense, more easily pass on from one generation to another generation simply because there's less lyrics, less text?
Actually, I think in that context, based on my observation, especially here in Malaysia, a lot of people generally are more tuned, I don't know whether I'm right in saying this, but are more tuned to Hindustani music. I think also it's because of the fact that, you know, nowadays, you know, with mass media, you have Bollywood movies, you have, you know, Hindi songs and everything. So, whereas in Carnatic music, I guess for people to understand a lot of the structure and the formation, or, you know, there's so many elements to Carnatic music, which I think people generally might find a bit too much to take in. So, in that sense, I would say that Hindustani music is a bit more lighter. Like, you know, I think
it's more emotional based. Yeah. Hindustani music is more emotional based. It's based on the feeling at that point.
Yep.
And when an instrumentalist plays a raga, they go with the mood of that time. And so I guess
with the other one, then what dominates? You know, if Hindustani music is more emotional and more about the feelings, then what is Carnatic music more about?
In Carnatic music, that emotion is explored through the text of the song.
Yeah.
The text is used to guide the emotion of the composition of the main piece of the song. However, having said that, in Carnatic music, we have an aspect called Manodharma, which is improvisation. And that is free of any text. So it's whatever the artist feels at that time, that space, and it will differ from 1 second to the other. And that is entirely his own.
So with Hindustani music, there's always text. There is no Hindustani, just music?
There is.
There is.
But I think when she's saying Manodharma, an aspect of it, I think the Hindustani music probably focuses on that more.
Yep.
For example, if there's a vocalist singing, the music and the notes will be more important playing the
melody,
the text of it.
Yeah.
What do you be
or the
to?
Phrases.
Yeah. The phrases are given more importance.
Yeah.
You know?
But I wouldn't say that Carnatic music is entirely devotional or text-based as well.
Yeah.
I think because we have a lot of musicians, and even actually over the last century, I would say, even or even more, there are a lot of musicians who create pieces that are entirely improvisation-based. I mean, they may be lyrics, but, you know, that's where the musician or the instrumentalist or the vocalist shows his or her skill with regards to the control of the rag or the raga. And that can be in terms of rhythm, melody, phrasing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that it's based on or it's entirely devotional.
Yeah.
It can be just for hearing purposes.
Is the raga present only in Carnatic music and not in Hindustani music, or is it
it's
both?
It's common to
both
systems.
Both.
Yeah.
Bhuma Paranjyoti and Kalpana Paranjyoti Hariram Lam, all from the Temple of Fine Arts. They've been telling us about Carnatic music, and in particular, that which stemmed from Tyagaraja and Mianthesan. Coming up, they'll tell us about Raga and give us some examples of this Raga. Yeah. And tell us also about the musicians who will be coming from India to perform in this festival. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Tune to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, speaking with three people from the Temple of Fine Arts in conjunction with an Indian classical music festival happening this weekend. They are Bhuma Paranjyothi, Kalpana Paranjyothi, and Hariram Lam. What is the raga?
A raga, to put it simply, is the framework of notes that we use in Indian music. And that can change from one composition to another. So every composition has got a different raga on which it is based. If you want to draw parallels to Western music, I would give you an example of a scale. However, I would say it is not a literal translation because there are many elements in a raga that make it such. You can have a few ragas that sound very similar, but the phraseology of each might be completely different.
Give me an example of a vocal raga and what you do with it.
To again draw a parallel, in your C major scale would be do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. So in Carnatic music, I sing Carnatic music, you have Shankarabharanam, which is sa, re, ga, ma, pa, da, ni, sa.
Which sounds exactly almost
which
the
sounds
same.
Exactly the same. But that is just giving you the notes in the scale.
And
but
not the
actually,
actual.
Yeah, the actual characteristics of Shankarabharanam would only be if I did it such as sa re ga ma pa da ni sa sa ni da pa ma ga re sa.
What controls what you do? And I'm not talking about how your vocal muscles work. I'm thinking about what in your brain is saying, okay, I go up here slightly and it's like a semitone. Or
exactly. That was what I was going to say next. These are the microtonal differences which make it specific to each raga. So where I could have just gone sa re ga ma, I go sa re ga ma. So it's sort of oscillating between the two notes. And those oscillations are very, very important in Indian music.
What prompts the oscillation? Meaning that is it an oscillation prompted by a particular emotion or a particular idea? What prompts it?
I think over the years of study, I think this is my opinion, when you want to enhance the beauty or bring out certain elements of the raga, you know, like for example, another scale might probably have this similar notes, okay? Like for example, if I were to take a C major, as she had given as an example, and I were to give a C, maybe C Lydian, or C Lydian, which we call Raga Kalyani. Now, between Shankarabharanam, which is a C major, and Kalyani, the only difference, of course, is the fourth. But then how you would oscillate the notes would be slightly different. Like, for example, in Shankarabharanam, you have sa re ga ma pa da ni sa. But in Kalyani, I would sing it as Sa re ga ma pa da ni sa. What I've done is, I've just changed a note. The oscillation points will determine the raga itself. It is actually, it's all the microtones and all this, and it's a lot of understanding along the years that has been passed down and practiced. So that's
actually a simple explanation of a raga for a person would also be, it's like your face. You know, each one of us has got a face. We have our ears, we have a nose, mouth, eyes, but we all look different, right? So the same thing goes for the raga. It has a structure, it has certain notes, but how is it different? It's by the way it is, by its certain phrases and tweaks and ornamentation. Yeah.
And the phrases are not equivalent to, like, say, when you talk about musical motifs in Western music. It's not the same thing.
In Western music, I think what differentiates Western music from Indian music, besides the scales and the major and minor chords and stuff and all that, is that it's the application of diatonic scales and harmony. In Indian music, I would say now harmony is slowly being explored, but we, like, you know, like as we had played earlier, we have a drone with us, you know, and we have, it's like a fixed note. Whereas in Western music, you have so many changes in chords and melodies, you know, which sort of...
The weight on harmony is more proportionally less in Indian music as a whole.
So Western music, I think, you know, you might change, like, from a major scale, in between you might change into a minor. We don't have that so much in Indian music. In that sense, the rules and regulations of sticking to a particular rag or raga and a particular rhythm, you know, we have to stick by that.
I get the sense that, you know, classical Indian music suffers the same fate as any classical music, you know, whether it's Western or Chinese and all that, in that it's not something young people appreciate. So, except that you three are all very young people. So what can be done to draw young people into traditional music, which is struggling to survive? Maybe not in Indian music, because I see a lot of young people still practicing this.
You are right in some respects, in that it is not the popular music, you know. I think an analogy to draw would be that if there was a Bollywood concert, you need to hire a stadium.
But, and we just did, didn't we? Not too long ago.
Yeah. I mean, it happens quite frequently. And if you have a classical music, you only have a hall of about 300 to 400, 500 people at the most. And even that, sometimes, you only attract those connoisseurs of the classical music. And that is because I think conventionally it's been available to those of the middle and upper classes of society. And what Tyagaraja, for an example, did was take it to the masses. He used to go from house to house with a begging bowl. And while doing so, he would sing his music and attract the people on the streets. And there would be a whole congregation of people following him. Obviously, we don't have people doing that nowadays. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, that has waned or dwindled. But I always tell my students, you know, music and classical music, it's an oral exercise. Without your ears, you can't hear any music. So exposure to concerts, and with the internet and technology, there is no excuse, you know. You have it streaming 24/7. Mm-hmm. That's how you learn to appreciate, by absorbing yourself.
There must be that desire to start off, right?
That's
there must
right.
be that interest in music, regardless where it comes from and what its traditions are.
And I think, like, the three of us, I mean, we are in it because from young, we've had the good fortune of having parents who were either listening to it or made us listen to it without forcing it on us. Yeah. And so that...
So it was always in the home.
Yeah.
It, I think it sort playing of grew, while reading. Grew onto us, you know, and also where we come from, you know, that was sort of inbuilt. But I think looking at today's crowd, and especially here in Malaysia, you know, we have so many races and it's so diverse. In my opinion, the best or one of the ways that we can try to, I wouldn't say educate people, but, you know, give people that chance to understand and to appreciate what Indian music is about, I think it's probably through collaborative work, fusion music, things like that, because that's what the current generation is into, you know. It's,
I can hear purists gonna come down on you really hard as mixing all this music up, and then what do we have in a sense, like
fusion becomes confusion for purists.
Correct, there is no doubt about it, but I wouldn't say that that's a bad thing, especially here in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Because change is necessary. I'm not saying drastic change, you know, and it's not like we are killing off
a different tradition,
but I think we need to find ways to make it organic and, you know, understandable.
Well, I mean, some would argue that by doing this kind of fusion, then you get people to at least start listening, and then that might, at some juncture, take them to where the roots are, the sources of the tradition.
Yes.
Okay, this concert that's coming up this weekend, this festival,
yep.
Who are the people coming?
We have 5 main feature artists performing, 4 of whom are coming from India. And the 5th one is Kalpana, who's here with us in the studio. On the first day, we have Mandolin U. Rajesh. He's a mandolin player, as his name obviously
He has adopted
states.
That name
he
as part of his formal name.
The mandolin as his
stage
prefix. Yeah. He is the brother of the late Mandolin U. Srinivas, who is a world-class mandolin musician. And anybody who's into world music or Carnatic music will know Mandolin Srinivas for his electric dexterity and fingering and brilliant musician. On the second day, we have young guy from America, actually. He's an American who is now residing in India, having decided to take up music as a full-time profession. And he plays what is called the Chitravina or Gotavadyam. It's an instrument, something like the veena, for those who might know what a veena is, except that it does not have frets and it works like a slide guitar, if you like. He will be performing on the second day, which is Saturday, followed by another musician who is a Hindustani vocalist, and he resides in London, but of Indian origin. And he will be singing Hindustani vocal music for us. So we've got a nice eclectic mix of people on the first 2 days. And then the third day we have Kalpana, who will be playing the sitar. And this will be followed by another world-class musician who's a Carnatic singer called Neyveli Santana Gopalan. And he comes from India and he teaches worldwide. He's got a large following now with technology online.
And so the festival goes on from Friday through Sunday.
Yep.
And
yes.
Throughout the day, you don't just have one show, you have maybe a couple of shows, right?
Yeah. On Saturday and Sunday morning, we have student offerings. And as particularly on Sunday morning, we are presenting the procession for Tyagaraja. And that's where we will be performing
the five gems,
the Pancharatna Kirtanams.
So folks should really go to your website and get all the details that they need to participate in this whole festival.
It's open to anyone.
And the Temple of Fine Arts, the telephone number there is 03-2274-3709.
Yes.
Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the festival starts Friday to Sunday. Call up Temple of Fine Arts, go to the website, find all the information that you need. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.